Welcome to this series of Engineering Construction Claims podcasts from me, John Fotherby.
And me, Alex Johnson. John, before we even tell everyone who we are, shall we just explain why we're doing these podcasts? We're both involved in the business of helping our clients make and defend claims relating to engineering and construction projects around the world. Now, perhaps open with a controversial statement. This is a business in which there is a load of misunderstanding, misconception, and just plain old mistakes that, in my experience, cause projects to overrun the schedule, overrun the budget, cause parties to incur costs that lead to millions of dollars in disputes, if not billions of dollars in disputes. So I think we've both seen enough of that to know that there's a space for sharing our experiences with people about what it really takes to make successful claims for issues that commonly affect engineering construction projects. So over the coming weeks, we've agreed to issue a series of podcasts covering the subject of claims and all the things that go into them. So let me tell you who I am. I'm a lawyer, so I'm often at the forefront of this issue of claims. I'm a partner at Freeths. I specialize in resolving disputes in engineering and construction projects all around the world. I've helped clients to solve problems that have affected all types of engineering construction projects, from airports to yacht clubs, which was as close as I could get to a project beginning with Z, because I don't think there have been any. I advise clients on international arbitration, on litigation, mediation, other forms of alternative dispute resolution, ADR. And clients often come to me when they're facing problems on their projects. And so a lot of what I do is to help those clients avoid disputes and to keep the projects on track. A quick bit about my firm. Freeths is a top 50 law firm in the UK. We have over 1,000 members of staff. We advise our clients on the full range of legal services that they might need. And we have a well-recognized and high-quality team of expert construction and engineering lawyers who advise clients on some of their most important construction and engineering projects. And John, what about you?
Well, I'm a partner in Kingsfield Academy. We are primarily a training company, and we focus on developing the contractual commercial competencies of project teams that are delivering projects in the global engineering construction industry. We also consult with senior managers to help them resolve successfully their commercial contractual challenges on their projects. I've spent my entire career dealing with commercial contractual issues in engineering construction as a line manager in contracting organizations, as a project director on multi-billion dollar projects, and as a consultant. And I've been involved in many claims, disputes, arbitrations, litigations. And for several years now, I've acted as an expert witness in arbitrations on project management. I'm chair of the European Construction Institute, and I've been since 2017, and a member of the Constructing Excellence Board of Management. So, Alex, as you mentioned, our rationale for this series of podcasts is to consider the role of effective claims in the successful delivery of engineering construction projects of all kinds and sizes across the globe, and how by working closely together, project teams and their legal advisors can help create added value that can be realized through effective project and claim management. And I think it is that teamwork that makes the success, and that team coming together early on in projects to, as you mentioned, try and avoid the disputes in the first place and solve the commercial contractual issues as a process that is just part of doing the jobs.
Absolutely. Disputes don't help projects to get completed. And if you can avoid them, great. If you have to deal with them, then you have to deal with them. But let's ask the key question. John, why are there so many claims and disputes on engineering construction projects?
Well, I'd like to bring in an expression that might explain this, and that's to talk about the claim territory.
Okay, so what's the claim territory?
Well, I think your and my experience suggests that there is a big divide between the perspectives of owners and contractors and subcontractors even. And in that respect, the owner view seems to be that projects take too long and cost too much, whereas contractors take the view that the owners don't pay enough and they don't have enough time to do the job. And that's why I call it the claim territory, because between those two perceptions is a mess. And of course, the other thing that owners tend to say quite frequently is that contractors at bid stage overpromise and at the delivery stage underperform. And I think one of the fallacies is that you can make up for that underperformance by making claims. Mm. And experience shows that performance is really a driver for successful claims. You can't have one without the other, because it's too easy for the owner, and rightly for the owner, to say, this is not the true position. Mm. You're just camouflaging your own shortcomings. And that is, in my experience, I think yours as well, often at the heart of dispute.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I'd also add, in the interests of balance, as they say, that from the contractor's perspective, I think owners have unrealistic expectations and they don't understand how the job needs to be done. And so the contractor's view is, well, I know how to deliver this project.
Yeah, well, that brings me on to another subject about the beginning of a project, where there is often an unhealthy dose of optimism that blocks out the underlying disparity between the two perceptions. We've just signed the contract, we're all friends, it's all going to go well, even though we're going to do exactly the same things that we've done on previous projects that didn't go so well. But eventually, of course, that optimism fades away rapidly when reality strikes and there's a realism that there is not sufficient time to deliver the project. The budget is extremely tight or insufficient. And of course, all of this leads to a conflict between the parties, which has then the potential to escalate into dispute.
It's that that tension between sales and execution, isn't it? And often the people doing the sales are never the people who are doing the execution. And so all of what you said is absolutely true. I think that the seeds of most disputes are sown very early in the project, at the bid stage. In fact, they are baked in many cases. And they often arise due to just unrealistic expectations on both parties.
Yeah,
at the beginning.
And I think also in that context, you know, the idea that we can bid low, accept a tight schedule, and make up for the deficiencies in claims is actually, particularly in the international EPC lump sum contracting world, just yep. doesn't work. That assumes that the employer or owner is an idiot, which they're not. They understand. And this just ruins the relationship as well. A good dose of honesty by both sides about the situation is really what's required. It's often missing, of course. And in that respect, you know, when there's a claim on the table, the owner's response is, or if there's a delay, let's say, to start with, the owner's response is, get back on schedule, recovery plan, etc. And of course, the contractor then says, well, no, or yes, we will, but it's your fault and we want paying for it. And here, this is where, you know, again, we come right into the middle of the claims territory and we're poles apart as an employer and contractor. And that's the difficulty, because that precludes any sensible discussion about the situation and find a resolution unless the parties work at it very hard. So you know, the contractors make claims, owners rebut them, and without either party dealing with the issues. And so that just then goes on. And there we have the tit for tat, reams of correspondence backwards and forwards, arguing the case, often not about the real issues, but peripheral issues, because we're not dealing with the fundamental problem.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And this feels like a good moment to introduce the Arcadis 2022 Global Construction Disputes Report. Now, Arcadis have been producing these for the past few years, and it's always an interesting read for practitioners. In many ways, it's a fascinating report, and it says a lot about the claim territory that you've been talking about, John. The report explains the key trends and insights in the global disputes market over the course of 2022 for construction engineering projects. And I've just picked a few interesting facts and statistics from the report. The global average value of construction disputes in 2022 was $52.6 million. In the Middle East, it jumps to $90.4 million, which is compared to around $30 million in the US and in the UK. So that tells you that a tremendous amount of money is spent on construction engineering disputes that is not being spent on the construction engineering projects. You know, all of those $1 million could buy you quite a few decent sized projects, it seems to me. I think what's even more interesting in the report is the top three causes of dispute, which I'll read in reverse order. So in the bronze medal position, joint third place, the owner, the contractor, or the subcontractor failing to understand and or comply with their contractual obligations. And the second part of that is owner-directed changes, which is always always occurs. Silver medal, second place, errors and or omissions in the contract document. And in the gold medal position, the number one cause of dispute for global construction engineering projects is poorly drafted or incomplete and unsubstantiated claims. I mean, in my experience, any of those issues have potential to cause disputes, and they frequently do, and it may be more than one of those issues at the same time. But what's striking is it's how basic they all are. There's nothing very complicated about any of those things. Not understanding the contract, not complying with the contract, making mistakes in the contract, and then having had all of that, not being able to make proper claims. And it seems to me that that is causing a lot of wastage in terms of money in the industry.
Yeah, and we see from our training programs that there is a lot of misunderstanding from both sides or from all sides of industry. And it's quite amazing to me that exists in the industry. But it's what it is. So let's switch that round, Alex. So from your point of view and your experience, if a claim is well prepared that avoids the issues that you've just addressed from Arcadis, then what's the chances of that succeeding if it's well prepared and meets those criteria?
Well, if it's well prepared, in my experience, a well prepared claim is more likely to result in an amicable negotiation or settlement. And the reason is because it will put real pressure on the other side and limit their options for defending the claim. I think there's a perception that claims can be hastily assembled, that making statements equates to truth, and that when the other side sees your claim, they'll be so scared that they'll instantly agree to it. And that sounds a bit basic, but I think that sort of misconception underlines a lot of the claims that I see. Whereas in fact, it's very easy to defend a claim that's complete nonsense or a complete work of fiction, because, well, it just is. Arguments that are too emotive or not based in fact are easy to demolish generally by showing the other side the actual facts. And there's no reason, in my experience, to amicably engage with a party that is obviously not telling the truth, or is obviously inflating claims, or introducing spurious claims, or even what you see sometimes is contaminating what could be actually good claims with a bunch of bad ones. And those are all quite extreme examples, but in essence, a good claim is harder to defend. And actually, that means the dispute has a higher chance of being settled. As we know, most cases settle. They don't reach arbitration or they don't reach court. But only when there's something real that's being presented. I mean, there are other things that can prevent settlements. You know, some disputes become very personal at particular levels within a company or a vendetta. But fundamentally, a bad claim is more likely to cause or prolong a dispute because there is more interrogation of that required. Anyway, we've been talking quite conceptually about claims at the moment, John, but what are the claims that contractors usually make?
Yeah, well, just before I do that, I'd just like to add something to your point there that you've made. I remember having a conversation with a senior executive of one of our clients when we were big delay and we were saying it's going to take 2 to 3 months to put an extension of time claim together here. And he said, I can do an extension of time claim in a week. And my response was, well, probably, but I believe the owner will be able to respond to it in less than a week.
Yeah.
So it's the thing about claims is that you have to take your time. If you're going to do it properly, it needs thorough research and preparation. And of course, documentary evidence is king. And if you don't have the evidence, then you're lost. And that applies to any of the sort of five claims that are common in the industry. And the first, of course, is the simple, straightforward change and variations. It is a claim, regardless of what the label is in the contract, we're making a claim. And that's usually confined to the increase or decrease in the scope of work, the quality of the work. And it really is about price adjustment. Sometimes it's cause for delay and extension of time, but not always. It can be. And of course, when you get multiple variations or changes, then we have cumulative impact. And that really does cause some additional costs and possibly good grounds for extension of time. And then we have extension of time, which I think we're going to deal with in another podcast in some detail. This simply fixes the new completion date due to matters for which the owner is liable and is obliged under the contract to award an extension of time. Then we have prolongation costs, and these are the costs that are attributed to being on the project longer, often called loss and expense claims. There is the question then of acceleration, which simply means that the works are going to be completed ahead of the contract completion date or any amended completion date as a result of extensions of time, and for which the owner is then obliged to pay for having that delivery achieved. And it can only be done really by agreement between the parties and not mandated by one party on the other. And again, we'll come into in the other podcasts a little bit more about acceleration and how that works and the different types of acceleration, etc. And lastly, we then have loss of productivity, which, let's say it probably accounts for the largest amount of losses on a project, typically, particularly in the construction phase, but can be in the engineering phase as well. And it is without doubt the most difficult claim to prove. And the idea that we bid on X amount of hours and we spent Y amount of hours and the difference is what the owner can pay us for, that doesn't work. Even though many claims look like that. So it does require a great deal of effort and records to be able to prove a loss of productivity claim. And attribute, this is the difficulty, is attributing the liability for those losses to matters for which the owner, employer, is liable. That's the real difficulty. And it does require a lot of effort. But those are the five claims, and we're going to address all of those over the course of the next few weeks in much more detail, and about how those claims can be prepared successfully, and what happens if you don't prepare them successfully and become a victim of the Arcadis report.
Yeah, so I think there's some great points you mentioned there, and the, you know, the effort that you have to go to produce good claims shouldn't be underestimated. And an expression I always like to use, and perhaps clients don't always like to hear, is that you need to sharpen the axe before you cut the tree. A lot of clients like to swing a blunt axe at a tree in the hope that the tree will fall over. Well, it doesn't. So some areas where parties fail to produce good claims. I mean, here's a few examples. Failing to show a contractual entitlement. That's a fairly basic point, but any claim needs an entitlement to make it. Failure to establish and demonstrate cause and effect, i.e. showing that something happened that caused something else to happen. So an event arose and it caused delay, and the delay caused prolongation costs, for example. Failure to satisfy burden of proof obligations. Now, those may differ depending on the jurisdiction that that applies. Failure to demonstrate mitigation where it's required. Some contracts require a duty to mitigate, and some legal systems require parties to mitigate. And failure to produce adequate, or indeed sometimes any, supporting evidence. That's really key. And it goes back to your point, John, about records. And I could go on. And so I'm sure I will, but in upcoming podcasts.
With respect to the burden of proof obligations that any claimant has, then we at Kingsfield Academy have developed a tool that you can use to be able to test your compliance with those burden proof obligations. And this basically deals with what is the cause of the event, who is responsible for that cause, who bears liability, what is the impact in terms of price and time, and sometimes conditions such as changes to guarantees, etc., and warranties. What is the contractual entitlement? Has the contract been complied with in all respects, or a compliance issue? And what is the evidence that supports the claim? And that's probably one of the most important. As Alex was saying, records and evidence are fundamental. So you can get to our website, you can have a look at that. And if you're interested, we also have an e-learning course to actually apply the seven key factors tool.
Thanks, John. Well, I think that brings us to the close of this podcast. Next time, we'll be talking about delay and extension of time. I've been Alex Johnson. You've been John Fotherby. If you have any questions, talk to us on our respective LinkedIn accounts and post us any questions on there. We'd be very happy to answer.